Hey everybody, Nick Espinoza, your chief security fanatic here, and it is not Sunday, but we are doing Breaches of the Week. If you're a regular listener or follower of mine, you might have seen my post on social media that yesterday, Sunday, I was not able to get to it, but let's dive in now because there's no time to lose and we want to keep that cadence up. So with that, this week's data breaches, absolutely what you'd expect. If you're a longtime listener follower, you know what's going on here. So with that, as always, let's thank the following people that sent me a lot of this information. And that would be June Kelper, Rodrigo Lopez, Jacqueline Wolf, and Chuck Corsi. Thank you very much. And with that, let's start huge with Kaiser Permanente, because millions of Kaiser Permanente members have potentially been impacted by a data breach. Now, according to a statement from Kaiser, quote, certain online technologies previously installed on its websites and mobile applications, end quote, may have transmitted personal information to third-party vendors. Now, again, I've talked about this both in and out of Breaches of the Week, where the integrations of things like Facebook, and in this case, X, aka Twitter, Google's platform, Bing, etc., essentially are integrated into the development of these websites and therefore transmitting a whole bunch of data to the biggest data brokers on the planet. And information exactly like that when members access Kaiser's websites and mobile apps was happening. Now, according to Kaiser, the information that was potentially transmitted in this breach is IP addresses, information indicating whether a user was signed into a Kaiser Permanente account, information showing how a member or patient interacted with or navigated its websites and apps, search terms used on Kaiser's health encyclopedia, and for the record, no usernames, passwords, social security, financial account information, or credit card numbers were transmitted, according to Kaiser. So if you are a Kaiser Permanente patient using their web portals, you definitely want to check in. Moving on, here's one we haven't heard in a while, but is still going. It was that big last year, and that is MoveIt. That's right, we have an update on the MoveIt data breach because more companies are declaring, and in this case, the University Systems of Georgia. That's right, the entire University System of Georgia. And what they are saying is full or partial last four digits of social security numbers, date of birth, bank account information, as well as federal income tax documents with tax ID number. Now, the interesting part is going to be, did the University System of Georgia just find out that they were using MoveIt because the entire cybersecurity community knew about MoveIt and we've known about it for like a year now? They just find out, or they delayed, in which case they're going to get sued. But either way, they're probably going to get sued. And speaking of getting sued, let's do our mini segment entitled, If You Just Spent Money on Cybersecurity, You Wouldn't Be Getting Sued, You Wouldn't Be Losing Your Reputation. And first up is telecom giant AT&T, because another class action suit was filed against AT&T by Beasley Allen on behalf of AT&T customers whose personal information was compromised during a cyber attack. Now, according to the lawsuit, AT&T failed to secure customers' personal information. We're talking full names, email addresses, mailing addresses, phone numbers, social security numbers, date of birth, AT&T account numbers, passcodes, all that kind of stuff. And they are doing this on behalf of the plaintiff, Scott Matthews, and all others similarly situated, aka class action. Now, despite notifying customers around March 31st of this year of this breach, AT&T failed to provide critical information about the breach, including when it occurred and also when it was investigated, according to the lawsuit. The lawsuit also alleges that AT&T should have explained to its current and former customers why it waited over 3 years to inform this of this breach. Never a good look. AT&T, you're going to be paying out. And so if you're an AT&T customer, odds are you're going to get paid. Moving on, Ameritas Mutual Holding Co., they are going to pay up to $850,000 to settle a proposed class action alleging they failed to protect personal information for 95,644 current and customer policyholders during a May 2019 breach under a deal that has been so far approved by federal court. Now, victims of the breach could be eligible for up to $6,250 each in payments to cover out-of-pocket costs related and up to $160 to compensate them for lost time responding to this, according to the motion for preliminary approval for settlement. So heads up to you, Meritas Mutual Holding Co. policyholders, go get money. Moving on, Okta Pharma Plasma Inc. on April 17th, basically they had a data breach affecting 190 of their donor centers across 35 states, exposing social security numbers and laboratory data in violation of federal law requiring covering health bodies to protect sensitive information. Now, this is according to a complaint filed in the U.S. District Court for Western Virginia. I'm sorry, for the Western District of North Carolina. Excuse me. And so the complaint obviously alleges that they did not secure everything. That's all I've got right now. But heads up, this is a new one, Octopharmaplasma. Heads up to you, patients. And that is the end of the mini segment. If they had just paid money, they wouldn't be getting sued. If they put in good data protection and all of that, they wouldn't be getting sued and they wouldn't be losing their reputation. You don't want to end up on Breaches of the Week here with me. Moving on, let's talk about the U.S. Coast Guard Reserve. Now, they alerted thousands of their personnel to a data breach last week, nearly 3 months after someone improperly sent their personally identifiable information to unapproved recipients. And this is according to the branch of the military confirming it this past Tuesday. Now, an April 18th notice from the Coast Guard Reserve warned that a data exposure discovered on January 24th distributed the private material to, quote, individuals with no authority to view the information, end quote. That is according, basically, a retired Coast Guardsman who received the notification, basically is the one that put this out. Thank you, Military Times, for publishing that. Now, this incident affected 10,700 Coast Guard Reserve members. The Coast Guard also said home addresses of 7,554 individuals and the name and employee identification numbers of another 3,146 were also inadvertently released. Now, a review by the service of the incident revealed that a document used for internal processes that had a separate tab, I'm guessing Excel, that contained this information went to the personal email addresses of 85 Coast Guard Reserve members. And here we are, data breaches declared. You got to make sure you've got good discipline on this stuff. So heads up, Coast Guard Reserve. Moving on. Cleveland Catholic Diocese. Interestingly enough, I just spoke about the Phoenix Catholic Diocese, and before that, there was another Catholic diocese, so I'm guessing the Catholic Church is under assault by some kind of threat actor. Now, the Cleveland Catholic Diocese is guiding their employees to remain vigilant after discovering a data breach. They said they reached out to those that may be impacted on April 17th, and they announced on their website that an unauthorized individual gained access to an employee's email account between December 14th through January 12th, last year to this year. Now, the diocese also said they discovered potentially impacted data that contained employees' personal information following their review on March 14th. So heads up to you, if you're employed by the Cleveland Catholic Diocese, good luck. Moving on. Let's talk about Westcom Resource Group, or WRG. On February 23, they notified the Direct Federal Credit Union of a security incident and launched an investigation. So, essentially, they are a third-party supplier to the Direct Federal Credit Union, but Westcom essentially has to declare a data breach. And if you are a Direct Federal Credit Union, why can't I say that, member, your name, account number, and Social Security number may have been compromised. We do not know how many members were affected, so heads up, and I'll try it again. Direct Federal Credit Union members. There you go. So, moving on, let's talk about Reliable Networks of Maine, because they detected suspicious activity within their network. And as a result, essentially one entity, or specifically one entity, but two separate subsidiaries have had to declare, and there should be more. So the first one is Barry Dunn, McNeil and Parker, just known as Barry Dunn, LLC in general, and their subsidiary, Barry Dunn's Health Analytics Practice Group. So there you go. If you use Reliable Networks or Barry Dunn for anything, you're definitely going to want to check in, but I'm going to be watching that one. I think there's going to be more. Moving on, this one is a mess. We're talking about the District of Columbia's Department of Insurance, Securities, and Banking, or DISB, and also Tyler Technologies, but there's more caught up in this. Now, here's what's going on. Lockbit, the ransomware group, has claimed to be in possession of 800 gigabytes of data pertaining to the DISB, the U.S. Security Exchange Commission, or SEC, Delaware banking institutions, and other financial entities, and they're threatening to release all of this unless DISB pays a ransom. In other words, all of those groups basically are under the DISB umbrella, giving them information, and here we are. Now, the data appears to have been stolen from DISB's STAR system client in late March. Now, here's where Tyler Technology comes in. because they appear to be the ones that are providing this. They are a software and service provider for the public sector. And so in separate incident notices, both Tyler and the DISB reveal that the attack involved unauthorized access to cloud environments that were hosting DISB star client data. And so as a result of that, Tyler, DISB, the SEC, Delaware banking institutions, and more are caught up in this. And so again, hot mess. LockBit is very good at their job. Moving on. Let's talk about Advara. An unauthorized party was able to access consumer-sensitive information, including name, social security, and dates of birth. They have been sending out letters as well. Not sure what Advara does, but the Moffitt Cancer Center had to disclose a data breach as a result. So I'm guessing there's some kind of biller or HR system, but heads up to you, Moffitt Cancer Center patients and employees and Advara customers, I guess. Moving on, let's head on over to California and talk about the Glendale Unified School District, because the IRS, interestingly enough, the Tax Revenue Service here in the United States, recently notified teachers, nurses, counselors, and other faculty members at Glendale Unified that they could not file their taxes this year because they already had. Or at least somebody using their information did. Very common scheme. Now, the attackers locked district employees out of their own system and demanded an undisclosed ransom for the safe return of their data, according to a spokesperson for the district. Data included employee and student names, dates of birth, social security, driver's license, and financial account information. In the ensuing months, the full extent of the breach emerged when district employees tried to file their federal and state income taxes. It's post-tax season now, but they couldn't, because they'd already been filed fraudulently. And for the record, that's always why you file a tax return at a slight loss, because who's going to want to file a fraudulent loss? And there you go. Moving on, let's talk about Lamont Hanley and Associates. An unauthorized party accessed their consumer-sensitive information, which included names and social security. They've begun sending out notices as well, and Atrius Health has had to declare as a result, because Lamont Hanley and Associates is handling, I'm guessing, their medical billing. That's just kind of what they sound like, but heads up, Atrius Health patients. Moving on. Let's talk about Nexperia. They are a global chip maker, and they confirmed a significant data breach after attackers accessed some of their systems and potentially stole sensitive information, and including the company's intellectual property. Now, Nexperia, if you've not heard of them, is a subsidiary of Wing Tech Technology. They're a Chinese tech firm that was acquired in 2018. Based in Nijmegen, the Netherlands. Please, I apologize to my Dutch listeners and viewers. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. They operate, for the record, Nexperia operates in the United States, Europe, and Asia, and has 15,000 workers worldwide. So I don't have much more than this right now, but that's obviously a huge hit to the semiconductor industry. Moving on, let's talk about Educational Computer Systems. On April 19th, ECSI, Educational Computer Systems, Inc., filed with Maine after discovering information belonging to students at several schools was compromised as a result of a data breach. Now, in this notice, ECSI explains that the incident resulted in an unauthorized party being able to gain sensitive access to sensitive information. We are talking names and social security numbers and more. They are sending out notices as well. So heads up to you if your district uses Educational Computer Systems, Inc. or ECSI for all your computer systems needs. And finally, we have a really interesting one for you this week. It wasn't as long of a week, but this has definitely been an interesting week. And so let's talk about some new laws and rules for the advancement of security. And interestingly enough, these are coming from both the United States and Australia. And what Australia is doing, and quite frankly, ever since the TELUS data breach down under, they have really been on a tear to strengthen their infrastructure. And quite frankly, as Australia continues to grow and expand, there's a lot of new construction down there, the attacks continue to increase. And so Australia being on it, I think, is a model for us all. So good on ya, down under. So here's what the Aussies did. In a landmark decision that underscores the evolving landscape of cybersecurity law in Australia, the Supreme Court of New South Wales judgment on this case known as HWL Ebsworth Lawyers v. Persons Unknown established that Australian courts now may order injunctive relief to restrain unknown attackers from dealing in stolen data. Now you're thinking, how on earth are you going to stop an attacker you don't even know from releasing all of this? But here are the key points from this law. And I think it's a good step, even though, again, there is that wild card. So first things first, It's an Australian first. The Supreme Court of New South Wales has granted injunctive relief to restrain unknown hackers from using stolen data. Now, that's the core of it. But injunctive relief, also known as an injunction, is essentially a legal remedy that may be sought from the courts to require a defendant to stop doing something or require them to do something instead. So in this case, you're essentially saying, hey, hackers, stop it. Now, you're thinking that's absolutely ridiculous, and I will get to that in a second. Now, the second point here is that the decision outlines the factors to consider when seeking legal redress to protect confidential data. In other words, as you're laying out and you are understanding what you've got, in this case for Australia, maybe it's personally identifiable information, health information, whatever they consider sensitive, now you're quantifying that in a way that allows injunctive relief to flow. Now, the final point that I'm going to make on this is the practical effect, because while the practical effect of an injunction against cyber criminals may be limited, in other words, you can't reach into Russia, smack them around and say, don't publish this, obtaining such an injunction may prevent further harms by restraining online platforms and other third parties who have been made aware of the injunction from accessing or further publishing confidential stolen data. So in other words, let's say they decide to post an easy example. They decide to post all the stolen data on Twitter, for example, or Facebook. Now, Facebook, having been notified as a major platform of injunctive relief against the organization that just had a data breach, if, for example, Facebook allows the attackers to publish this personal information and it's discovered, then Facebook has a liability under Australian law to essentially basically pay damages to the party that is distressed, meaning my data gets breached for my corporation. I seek injunctive relief under the Australian law. That basically says the Australian government is now going to notify the Facebooks, Twitters, any major publishing platform, including, let's say, known entities like breach forms, all that kind of stuff, to say, hey, if you publish it more or allow others to publish it more for you, you're going to be liable under Aussie law. That is a really good step. So while it's not perfect, it really does focus the issues on how these platforms are allowing, let's say, the play ransomware gangs of the world to proliferate. And so it's a really good step by the Australian government. And again, there's holes in it, but this is where we're heading. And I think it's good. So good on you down under. The next one we're coming back to the United States for, because the FTC, or Federal Trade Commission, has actually just recently enabled some things that, quite frankly, I think we've needed for years and years and years. Now, the FTC, here's what's going on. Updated their health data breach notification measures to include more apps and technologies not covered by federal privacy health law. And this is what we're talking about, our health privacy law. Now, the key changes to basically the health breach notification rule that was issued this past Friday include revising the definition of, quote, public health record related entity, end quote, to make it clear that those entities now include anybody that offers products and services online, including mobile apps or vendors of personal health records. This is something that's been excluded. So when you're using, for example, that fertility app, let's say you're tracking your pregnancy, those kinds of things, those aren't covered in breach records. And by virtue of that, it's also been easier for courts, let's say, to order those records because they're not protected health. Meaning, let's say you're in a state that is restrictive for abortion. Now you've got covered entity under federal health. Now that fertility app is covered. And this goes for exercise apps and everything else. But the most glaring example of this politically would be the abortion debate. And I do not care what side you're on, but that's one of the core things that this applies to, as well as protecting our privacy in many other platforms that weren't previously, and apps that weren't previously covered. So the FTC action fills this gap because health apps generally aren't covered, as I mentioned, under HIPAA. And I think that is a good thing. So that is progress. And so in a week full of data breaches from Kaiser Permanente on down, which is a huge one, AT&T, take your pick, we do have some good news on the legal front. And it's not often I get to say that about the United States. And again, the Aussies have been on a tear, but I hope to see more of this in the future. And so those were your breaches of the week. Were you affected? Let me know. And please like, share, follow me here on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. And please feel free to subscribe to me at YouTube as well. And as always, stay safe, stay online, and please attempt to stay private. Thanks, everybody.